For everyone listening, welcome to Reflections on Patriotism. This is a mini podcast series by the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies. My name is Maddie Miller. I'm the media specialist for the Hauenstein Center, and we are doing this mini podcast series in preparation for our upcoming event on April 18th, which is called the same name as this podcast, Reflections on Patriotism. And I'm going to throw it to my colleague, Kaylor, to tell us more about the event.
So this is going to be a great example of our Common Ground Initiative programming. It's going to feature a panel conversation with Yale political science professor Stephen B. Smith, former USA Today columnist Cal Thomas, and historian and novelist Elizabeth Cobbs, who will join us to discuss many of the same questions that our guests have discussed on the podcast. Speaking of guests, I want to now take the opportunity to welcome our guests and have you both introduce yourselves. So Brooke, I'll start with you. Welcome. Tell us more about you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I'm Brooke Clement. I'm the director of the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Library and Museum. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Hi, I'm Hannah. I am a senior at Grand Valley State University, and I'm also a Cook Leadership Academy fellow candidate. So I'm super excited to be here.
Hannah, what's your major?
Special education.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Love that. Thank you so much for both of you for being here today. One special thing is that today is our fifth and final recording of this mini podcast series. For those of you listening, I don't know if this is your first one that you're listening to or if you've listened to all five, but for us, this is our fifth recording and it has been such a great conversation. So I want to encourage you to go listen to all the other episodes, but also to continue listening to this one. And I'm especially excited to kind of add Kaylor and I are going to add in a couple of our own thoughts today, which is so exciting. We've had a lot of time to think about it just through these recordings. But the question we've been starting with that I'd love to throw to both of you is, do you consider yourself a patriot?
Yes.
And you can tell us a little bit why. Okay. Yeah, why you would.
I mean, I think that the definition of a patriot is devotion to country. And I do believe that, you know, I have a strong affinity to the United States of America. Do I think that there are things that can be done better? Yes, but I also think that that's part of being a patriot too, is seeing progress where there it needs to be done.
I struggled with this. My immediate answer when I heard this question was that I don't think that I consider myself a patriot. And I think I narrowed it down to stemming from two separate things. One, I don't feel like I grew up like really strongly like affiliating with the United States and feeling like resoundingly patriotic besides like voting and, you know, reciting the national anthem and the Pledge of Allegiance. And also I think that in my like more adult years, I've kind of been turned off to it a little bit, just with like misinformation and some of like the extreme takes on patriotism, that are often displayed in the media and less so just the typical everyday patriot that I think that you are describing.
Well, I will just say I'm a wee bit older than Hannah here, and I remember growing up, you know, going to elementary school, you know, where we did the Pledge of Allegiance every day. We, you know, my father was an eighth grade history teacher, American history teacher, and so it was kind of ingrained in me as a, you know, a child then too. And I remember, you know, memorizing all of the presidents of the United States in order and like regaling my teachers with my ability to recount them like that. But so I do feel like there might be an age difference there too, in terms of how we view the word and the term and.
Yeah. And I also think that you talking about like having some familial ties to like the United States and learning about the United States is too, because I guess even in my home, like the USA wasn't like explicitly talked about in, you know, either a positive or a negative light. And so some of that could just honestly stem from just not having enough information to consider myself a patriot or not knowing enough to say, well, am I really a patriot?
Yeah, Hannah, I would definitely agree more with you. I was not raised in a home who talked a lot about like, I guess like patriotism or like even just politics and like that devotion to country. I would have never considered myself a patriot, but I actually feel like from these conversations we've been having, I would now more confident in, which is so funny. We literally started recording this a week ago. I would have said a week ago, I would have been like, no, I don't think I would consider myself a patriot. And now today I really do feel like I am a lot because of the theme that people have talked about of like being able to recognize faults in our country is okay. I kind kind of think I would have thought that, like, you had to think everything is okay in America to be a patriot. Mm-hmm. And now I realize it's a lot about devoting to our communities and trying to make them a better place. That's part of patriotism. And so that's why I would, which is so funny, I would consider myself a patriot, which has changed in the last week.
Yeah, I'd say very similarly. You know, for my family, I think we've heard a lot over these conversations, people talking about service, like military service. And that was something in my family that we did have a history of with, you know, even before my dad, but my dad's service in the Marine Corps, and which made me feel inspired to enter the Army National Guard after graduating from high school. Mm. But that being said, I don't know if I would have felt super strongly about patriotism either, which I think maybe some bizarre to say. But for me, patriotism was divorced from the idea of simply serving your country or to be a good citizen. It always felt, like you said, Maddie, about something more, about being willing to gloss over the worst parts, the finer pieces of history. And I've also felt very inspired by hearing some of these conversations we've had and people broadening that idea of patriotism. You know, like you said, Brooke, you know, it's not about being all for it. It's about appreciating it for what it is. It's about appreciating the culture and not being afraid of the history as well, right? Mm-hmm. To see it all in totality, which I think is a really interesting and fair way to go about it. So today, I do consider myself a patriot, but I will admit to being concerned about the way the term is used. Mm-hmm. We've heard the phrase weaponization of the term patriotism in our previous conversations. I remain very sensitive to that and would not want, for example, something like military service to be held as like a standard, that's something you have to do or should do. I think people can find their own sense of patriotism that works for them, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, well, I think we should go off of that. One of our questions that we wanted to ask was, what kind of things come to your mind when you hear the word patriotism?
I think right off the bat, I think of like 4th of July, anything like really American merchandise, and just like everybody on the 4th of July seems patriotic, and even people who aren't patriotic will be patriotic, and I'm using quotations over here, for the 4th of July, even me included, I'll dress up in, you know, red, white, and blue, and then now sitting here saying, I don't know if I consider myself a patriot, it's just so interesting to think about, like, the merchandization of of patriotism, and, like, the capitalizing on that in terms of, like, in a monetary way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I think July 4th would be, like, the epitome of when people, you know, show off their pride and patriotism, the wearing of the red, white, and blue, displaying your flag, and doing so proudly, or trying to think of other instances that come to mind. But yeah, I do think that there are symbols of patriotism that kind of just like come to mind in terms of like the flag and and then, yeah, I would say service, military service for me would definitely be right up there with it. Not necessarily like the only thing. And then, you know, political service or public service as a good. I do think that shows patriotism in a way that not everybody has that desire to do so. Like, so I think that there is a good thing there in terms of public service. Again, I think that you make a great point, Kayler, in terms of the weaponization of the word. I think that it definitely, you know, has taken that turn into more of a weaponized word. But if you're just looking at it as the definition, then, you know, that goes both ways. It's not meant to be a political veiled word.
Yeah, I think going off of that, Brooke, that's the other thing that comes to my mind when I think of patriotism is like what's displayed in the media right now and the weaponization and like kind of the extreme displays of patriotism that are maybe construing what true patriotism is. But patriotism is being slapped like onto that as this is a display of patriotism. And then I'm like, ooh, like, am I a patriot? I don't know if I agree with that. And so I just think that like the, you know, coming around with just like media and big presidential elections, and there's can be some more extreme displays that that can either negatively connotate or positively contribute to the definition or what I think of when I see patriotism too.
Yeah, something that Megan, our director, brought up in a previous episode was like capital P patriotism and lowercase p. And I obviously I'd never heard that, but that really resonated with me as well. Like I would never feel like there are some circles that I would never want to sit, like, openly be like, yeah, I am definitely a patriot, because that it carries this kind of weird sense. And I'm curious, like, when do you guys think, like, when did that turn? Like, when did that change? Like, I really don't know. Like, I didn't grow up in a home that talked about this topic a lot. So, like, if somebody would have asked me in elementary school or middle school or high school, are you a patriot? I would be like, I have no idea, but I do say the pledge every morning. So I don't know what that means. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that, again, we're talking about like our age gap differences. Like, my first real, like, big presidential election I remember is when President Obama was elected. And that's like the earliest I can feel of remembering like displays, positive or negative, of patriotism. I just think that with the growth of media, I think, and, you know, displays of media and being able to record anything and everything, I feel like is when like a turn, you know, toward a negative connotation. I'm sure that it was around in previous ways too, but I think the idea of even of military service is kind of taking like different connotations in the media, with not everybody feeling that it's a good thing. And there's just so many of those different perspectives that I think are causing such a divide.
I think Hannah also noted earlier too that it's misinformation, and misinformation at this time has grown to an existential level because of social media and the vastness of that communication service.
I agree with that. I feel, you know, thinking about my role with the Common Ground Initiative, I also think polarization plays a part in it, where you can take any concept or identity in the public sphere and you can pretty much guess that somehow, some way, our political system will find a way to sort it into a Democratic and Republican. And I find that both parties lay claim to certain concepts or truths that I would consider more central to an American experience that we should all share. You know, Hannah, you said like military service. I think that's absolutely true, right? As not being like necessarily only Republican good. Similarly for the Democratic Party, for like, you know, I think there's elements of like public service or, you know, higher education, these ideas that, you know, to try to draw a corner on the market on. Or, you know, about thinking about history in a nuanced way. I think that there's room on all sides for these things. So I think that plays into it as well. I think patriotism is just a victim of anything that somehow we're going to find a way to separate it into saying, well, you know, if you vote this way, then you shouldn't agree with, you shouldn't think that's a good thing.
I would agree. I think that patriotism in and of itself is not, you know, it's an innocent comment, but just, you're right, like, people will take claim on both sides of, like, political parties will take claim of, oh, if you do this, then you're a Republican. If you do this, then you're a Democrat. And then it so polarizes those things, especially if you align and you vote a certain way, but you feel differently on the other side of the aisle, per se. And then you're like, it just really throws a lot of confusion, when really a lot of this should just be a broad spectrum and a meeting in the middle for all Americans. It doesn't need to be labeled as a certain political party, which I think happens a lot in this day and age.
Yeah, I think a good representation of that is me walking into this podcast. I thought, with that very first question, do you consider yourself a patriot? I thought there was going to be a wide range of people who said yes, no, undecided, because we were bringing on people with a wide range of backgrounds and identities and whatnot. And overwhelmingly, people said generally yes, like, I do consider it, for an all different ranges of reasons. Like, the reasons why they were saying yes were so different, but a lot of people said yes. And I was really shocked by that, because I have grown up, especially in the last couple of years, of this, like, somewhat of a negative connotation of patriotism, which I think is really a cool part of this whole thing. So
yeah, I think that was one of the reasons I was really excited to do this, because I feel like internally that I have a negative connotation on patriotism, but I so appreciate listening to a broad spectrum, because in my daily life, I'm not, you know, confronted with these types of conversations very often, whether it was growing up not really talking about politics, or just not being around people who want to have those intellectually stimulating conversations. And so, like, a lack of information, I think, can stem to having that, like, negative connotation on patriotism.
I'm really curious about backgrounds. You know, I spoke a little bit about, you know, I do think that my dad's military service and then me wanting to follow in those footsteps helped shape the way I think about public service and patriotism. I found it's been really fascinating to hear people's experiences, what shaped them, you know, whether it's family, whether it's a faith tradition, whether it's a major, if you're, you know, digging into American history, right? We've heard all of those things fuel or drive people's opinions on patriotism one way or another. So I'm curious about experiences that you've had that you think that maybe that's where part of my thinking comes from on patriotism.
I mean, I go back to growing up in a household with a father who taught eighth grade history. Yeah. And, you know, everywhere we went on a road trip, family vacation, we had to stop at some national historical marker that, you know, only he really knew of. And so we were going to be educated right then and there. And I mean, for instance, that. Like we, how many of you have heard of the Battle of Cowpens? Yeah, no. And so going through South Carolina and stopping at that battle site, and it's literally just a field. but it has importance to people, and it had importance to my dad. And I think that seeing that kind of throughout my childhood, like, you know, we were going to get some American history built in. And then, you know, lo and behold, like, darn it if it didn't just wear off on me finally. And like, I wound up getting my degrees in American history and American culture. And I really do, you know, I respect, you know, the vastness of what America can mean to anybody. And mm-hmm. I think that that was just something that I grew up learning too. It was like, mm-hmm. it is a melting pot. It is, you know, we can take pride in all of the different mm-hmm. things that America means to everybody. Mm-hmm. And also see it for what it is and what it lacks too. And I think that that's just something that I grew up, you know, kind of seeing on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think mine is similar in the exact opposite effect, is that I didn't have any of those conversations mm-hmm. through growing up. My parents were both in the healthcare field, and my like upbringing was very like under a religious lens. And so a lot of like politics mm-hmm. and political things were seen through that lens, which is when I grew up to have my own opinions, I started to push away from, which is I think kind of where the feeling of non-patriotism stems from, because mm-hmm. I just aligned with, oh, well, politics is patriotism and I don't agree with a lot of these politics. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really then I think feel patriotic, because the only lens that I was getting it through was from a very religious and more conservative lens. Mm-hmm. And so when I discovered that I didn't agree with a lot of those things, I then assumed, well, that must mean that I'm not patriotic then if I don't agree with those things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that really shaped me, because we weren't talking a lot about just the middle ground of America as a history, instead of just so mm-hmm. embedded in like a political sphere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, Hannah. I had somewhat of a similar childhood, but more in like, so I was raised in a Christian household, and it was funny. I was literally just talking about this with my parents this weekend. I was with them because I was telling them about this podcast. But anyways, I grew up with parents who didn't talk about politics, not because they had any like extreme views, more because they somewhat didn't care. And I think they would be okay with me saying that. They were a lot more concerned about things that were happening locally within our church and within our faith and within our school systems. So the big politics, the big government didn't really matter to them as much. And I kind of grew up with that same mindset, kind of thinking like, oh, I don't really understand this, so I don't really care. Mm-hmm. But one thing that was a big turning point for me was I was in college. It was my senior year of college during the 2020 election, and I went to a Christian college, and I was part of the election programming, and it was actually not by choice. I actually really needed an internship. I really needed an internship, and somebody was like, oh, they're looking for like a PR communications manager for this like election programming. So I was like, okay, I'll do that. Again, I had no interest in it, but I got to be involved in these really cool conversations about the election, but specifically through a Christian lens, because we were at a Christian university. And that really changed my idea of like how to be civically engaged. And then I just feel like I have had opportunity after opportunity kind of ending now to where I currently am with this job, to be like, see how being civically engaged in that, and idea of patriotism of like, how can we work through these things that are happening in our communities, why we should care, mm-hmm. and how you can, you know, have good conversations like civil discourse and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So I think I definitely care a lot more, but I grew up with parents who didn't care as much. And I was literally just telling them this morning or this weekend, like, hey, you guys should care a little bit. And they're like, I know. I'm like, you guys should vote. Like, you guys should look at your local elections. Like, you guys should do this. And they're like, since when do you care? And I'm like, well, I'm like doing this thing for work and all this stuff. But yeah, I've definitely seen, especially in the last couple of years, the more since the 2020 election, definitely, I've seen more of an importance in being civically engaged and how that directly relates to how I feel about this country, how I feel aligned with America, not because I agree with everything, but more because I feel like I'm having more conversations about why these things are important.
I think that idea of civic engagement and understanding how to like have civic discourse is so important, and also something that I was not exposed to until I joined the CLA. And I think that through joining the CLA, I've been able to sit in on some really interesting conversations. We did an immigration policy panel that was really interesting because I have such a lack of knowledge about like mm-hmm. the economic side of American policies. And so being able to be in the CLA and be exposed to more of the mm-hmm. civic discourse, I think is what's been a real like stepping stone for me in understanding like who I am in the sphere of America and like where I fit in and where mm-hmm. I can make change. Because it just seems like such a broad topic when you're not exposed to it. So having that exposure has been really good.
A question that I'll throw out that I've been throwing out throughout these dialogues. I think it started probably with the first, you know, something someone said in the very first podcast and that I've just been honing in on. A sense of whether you feel that patriotism is a local phenomenon in that it's where you were born, it's who you see every day, it's where you go to work, you know, it's where you go for hikes. I mean, we simply are here. Right. So I think that shapes a lot of how we think about patriotism. But there's also an element that I've heard some of our guests talk about, which is more cultural or more unique to like, you know, anyone could be here and experience these things day to day. But I have a unique attachment to the history, the culture, the way of life, the mission of the United States in the world. To what extent do you think that your patriotism stems or, you know, your thoughts on patriotism stems from, you know, just we're here, you're here every day, that's who you know? And what extent do you think is unique to being an American or the American experience?
I think that a lot of it stems from me personally, I think, like being in America. Like I live in America, I was born in America. And so there's kind of that ingrained patriotism, mm-hmm. you know, we talked about the earlier, reciting the Pledge of Allegiance or the National Anthem, mm-hmm. And you just do that in your formative years so often. And so I think that a lot of it for me stemmed from just, this is the place that I happen to be born in. Mm-hmm. And I think that it would be similar if I were to be born in a different country.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I can see that. I also, like, I do feel like, yes, obviously, I've mentioned my father I don't know how many times now. So clearly, like me being born into that family definitely had a formative impact on my life. However, I do think that I've also had other instances where I have been exposed to patriotism in ways that one should probably never have to go through. Like, so for instance, I was a graduate student at Columbia University in 2001. What happened in 2001? Mm. 9/11. So, and I was there, and I experienced patriotism from the New Yorkers in ways that I would never have wanted to. But it was like, it was amazing going from 1 week, you know, trying to figure out housing in the New York City area because I wasn't getting housing at Columbia at that time. And then going from that to just, you know, a shared resiliency, mm-hmm. And walking around New York and seeing ribbons everywhere and just, you know, saying, yes, yes, this is our city, mm-hmm. and we are going to be patriotic, and we are going to love America, and we are going to, you know, we are going to band together in ways mm-hmm. that, like, I mean, up until that point, never had experienced mm-hmm. that. So I think that there are things that you just mm-hmm. experience in life, and you look back and it's like, yep, that was patriotism. Or mm-hmm. I moved to Texas and I got to, you know, really see immigrants who had gone through the whole process of becoming citizens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their shared pride in America. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yep, I am with you. I share that same pride. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that there have been many experiences throughout my life where I can point back to. Besides my formative years in my parents' home.
Yeah, that really makes me think about, like, what would my view of patriotism be like if I were to go through, I mean, what I would call a traumatic bonding mm-hmm. experience for the American people. Mm-hmm. I was born a couple months after 9/11, so I was born into a post, into a post 9/11 world. So being born into a post 9/11 world is just so interesting because you mm-hmm. hear people talk about the policies and the things that were implemented in airports pre 9/11, mm-hmm. post 9/11, mm-hmm. And or living through, like, other wars that the United States was involved in.
And I think you see that with, like, Pearl Harbor Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, like absolutely.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah, I do think that patriotism, like, dwindles as the generations go on. Mm-hmm. I think that you can see some really strong patriotism, especially from, like, individuals who were involved in a lot of the world wars and Pearl Harbor, and it kind of dwindles as you move through the generations, which is interesting. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, I often found it concerning if people were to say, you know, yes, I think there's something uniquely American about, you know, the American exceptionalist. That was something that never really agreed with me. But there's something I've come around to in that, you know, for a few things. Number one, I think being that it's a country that does not mandate a certain way of life or a certain point of view, or tries not to, and that people can, as you said, Brooke, come at it from different directions. I think that's something worth being very proud of. I think it's, you know, to varying extents, but at least historically been a place where people can come and join in the American experiment, where you can say we, like, the ideals that we have here of rule of law and democracy and freedom is something that we want people to come here and participate in, and that's enough for us. So you don't have to, you know, necessarily jump through any, like, a bunch of hoops. And mm-hmm. of course, historically, there's been times where we've forced people to do that, but mm-hmm. I think that that's where we've fallen short. So mm-hmm. in seeing what we stand for, what I think the ideal, what the outcome of America would be, mm-hmm. I find a lot of pride in that, and I think it's unique. Mm-hmm. I'd simply also try to remind folks that we're not maybe as advanced as we like to think they are in some of those things. But I think we stand unique in that. Another thing being, it's a place where people can disagree mm-hmm. and disagree publicly, which I think is amazing. So mm-hmm. even in and of itself, if the United States can be a place where we can simply disagree forever, that's mm-hmm. valuable too, because there's places where you can't. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think there's even power in, even in a polarized environment, of being a country where, yeah, we're going to get it wrong 99 times, but we'll probably get it right on the 100th time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something to be proud of. That's at least progress, mm-hmm. even if it's slow.
Yeah. I think mm-hmm. One cool thread that has been throughout these podcast episodes is people have often talked about when you go to another country is when you realize like how America is different. Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. was just reflecting on that a lot. Like, I am not an experienced traveler, but in the couple instances that I have gotten to travel specifically, I had this really cool opportunity in January of 2020 to go visit the country of Nepal for 3.5 weeks. And just talking to some of the people who have lived there and talking about their government and the way that, like, things are, I realize how different it is to the American experience, and especially that, like, freedom of speech that we have mm-hmm. that is really different than other countries. And I think that that is something, even though I wish some people didn't have freedom of speech, I definitely, when you look at it from abroad perspective, like you said, I am so happy to live in a country where we can disagree with one another. I think that that's really cool.
Yeah, I think that global experience does give you such a perspective on how mm-hmm. America is. I, in 2020, traveled and lived in Uganda for 3 weeks, and their system is just just an incredibly corrupt government. It's just, it's very violent. It's very volatile. And it just makes you think like, oh man, how would my life be if I lived here? If this was what my reality was, because it's just so different. There's so, freedom is like a big piece of America. And I think that that's something that people are really lucky to have coming here. And just something that I think sometimes you take for granted until you see like a stark opposition to that in the style of government or the social sphere or something like that, where you're like, man, I have a lot of freedoms here in America that that I'm really lucky to have.
One of the questions that we've been asking people is, does patriotism leave room for finding faults in your country? And I think we've each identified that yes, it does. What do you guys, what does that look like for you when we do find a fault in our country? What does it look like to be a citizen, to be an American? And what does it look like for us to find faults within our country and still be patriotic at the same time?
I think that's a really tough concept, because I think that a lot of the times people will use patriotism as like a set of blinders, and it's just America is awesome all the time, no matter what, and it's just like a blind following of every decision that America makes. And that's where I, pre this conversation, like really struggled with, because I'm like, no, I don't agree with every decision that's made within the United States. But I, looking back on it now from this perspective of having this conversation, I think being engaged in civil discourse and doing your civic duty, voting and informing yourself on the policies and what's happening in your community and what's happening in your state and what's happening in your country, and just being able to have those conversations with informed ideas. So I've had this conversation about, are you a patriot, like before with peers, and everyone's always, they're jumping on, yes, absolutely. And then you ask them, well, why? And then they're like, well, because I live here, because it's America. And there's not really like a reason behind that. And so I think that it's really important to just be really informed within civically at a local, a state, and a federal level.
I would agree with that. And I also think that if you are being informed, then you can see that there are things that are that are at fault. Like we shouldn't be obnoxious to that. We shouldn't we should be able to like absolutely see the faults that are clearly evident in our society, you know, in our, you know, small societies and our large societies. And so I think that and that's all part and parcel of being that patriot that's informed and being well-educated and civic-minded and recognizing, hey, there are these faults. How can I do better? Just, you know, taking that one individual step, how can I do better? Then taking it to the larger level, like, how can we do better? And yeah, I think that's just part of it all.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good way, like an action plan for how do we get away from this negative connotation of patriotism and this extremist view of patriotism, is just because I feel like a lot of people are just not informed. And I think that information is going to be like the gateway to kind of finding some middle ground between the opposition right now. And also just giving people like an individual action plan. I think sometimes people look at government and like, whoa, that's way too big for me to try to figure out on my own. But even just having an individual, okay, what can I do in my community is a really great stepping stone.
So I'm really curious. I'm going to take it in a direction we haven't before, because I think we have a really good opportunity here. I want to ask a little bit about the presidency. We're the Hollenstein Center for Presidential Studies. And, of course, Brooke is here, so that's going to be great. So I think as we think about public service, and I think it's fair to say that the presidency could be seen as the epitome of service to country, right? I mean, it's a single person leading the executive branch, which is an amazing thing. It's a lifelong journey, right, to rise to that level. I'm actually going to ask first, Hannah, if you could tell me how you view the office of the presidency. Like, if you were to meet with the president, how quick would you to show respect or deference to that position, versus is it a human element? What do you expect from someone to say they're going to be the leader of our country, you know, in light of this conversation? You know, do you expect them to show certain patriotic elements? I'm just curious about your view on the presidency, and then we'll turn it to Brooke to hear your thoughts.
Absolutely, regardless of who is in office, I think that the presidential status like commands a lot of respect. Regardless of who it would be, I would absolutely like have a lot of respect for them and treat that conversation in a very professional manner. And what I would look to see from somebody who's sitting in that presidential seat is really just to be informed about all aspects of our country, and trying to make sure that they are serving like the whole public. Mm-hmm. I think that the two-party system, it can get a little bit sticky sometimes with only serving, you know, the political party that the president aligns to. And so I think that it's just really important to see America as it's a whole country. And that I think is important to remember.
Well, that's fabulous. Thank you. Brooke, will you tell us a little bit about your spin?
Absolutely. I think that the office of the presidency absolutely deserves some level of respect there. Like, mm-hmm. I have, you know, not to toot my own horn here, but I have, I've met several presidents, and all of them very charismatic men. And so you cannot but like them, mm-hmm. and respect them. And they've done something that only 43 other people have been able to do. So yes, I mean, there is a level of respect there that is just kind of, you know, automatic. Yeah. And so, but that being said, I think that, you know, having a president who is open-minded, mm-hmm. is willing to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, plenty of instances where, you know, I've worked at several presidential libraries, where, so I've learned a lot about these men, and it's like, you know, ultimately they hear the arguments, they hear the pros and cons to the things, and then they are the ones that ultimately have to make those decisions. And as long as we know that they've been fully informed, mm-hmm. and they're not just like spouting off of a decision, like, you know, mm-hmm. offhandedly, like, I think that that's where I also find respect for these persons. Mm-hmm. And there are some decisions that may be personally detrimental to their furtherance of their political careers. For instance, you've got Gerald Ford, who makes the ultimate decision to pardon Nixon. And that was that. Folks, like, I mean, mm-hmm. he was not going to win the election in 1976 because of that decision. But he made that decision because he saw that it would be good for the whole country.
I think that's such an interesting point of view, is like making a decision even though you know that it's going to hurt your personal or professional career. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as often anymore. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. it's interesting to hear the perspective of somebody who's seen more than just, you know, the presidents I've seen in my lifetime. Yeah. And yeah, I think that that's, I would then add that to my statement as well, as, you know, making decisions for the country as opposed to for like a personal gain.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I love that. That really will make me think, because I would agree. I think I would consider it a patriotic act when a president goes beyond their own political ambitions, themselves, mm-hmm. their party, to say, I'm now going to act in the good of the country.
Absolutely.
And I've enjoyed seeing more discourse around what mm-hmm. we should expect from our president. And the mm-hmm. president has to remember that, you know, I get that you want to win another term, but you also need to serve all Americans yeah. in your mm-hmm. role in government. And I think that speaks to more than just the presidency, right? I mean, that speaks to all levels of government.
Yeah,
but
all
it's
elected
just so
officials.
Easy because it's one dude up there, right? And so it makes it really simple to talk about them.
Yeah.
Maddie, I'm curious your thoughts on the presidency. I'll throw you under the bus as well.
Yeah, thanks, Kaylor. no, I agree with both of you. I think it's really interesting. Like I mentioned earlier, I grew up with a family who didn't really hold a lot of weight in a presidential election. So, you know, my parents, I knew who they voted for in each election, but whether our candidate that we voted for won or lost, it really never affected how we lived our lives, how my parents never even really talked about it. They were just kind of like, oh, darn, or yay, and move on. And so I've kind of viewed the presidential office that way. I would love to have a candidate that I could be really proud of in there, but ultimately, no matter who it is, no matter what party I affiliate more with, they're going to make decisions that I don't agree with, and they're going to make decisions that I do agree with. Mm-hmm. And I think that to hold one person to such a high status kind of, to me, kind of feels a little silly. So I think for me, that is great. And that is really cool what you said. Like, I've never thought about, like, only 43 men have had this position. I think that's really cool. And that's such a great honor. But to me, it doesn't hold a lot of, there are things that are a lot more important to me. I, like I said, from my background, I think a little bit more about our local elections and our local people who are making decisions that maybe directly affect me a little bit more than the president does. So I think that when people get all up in arms about this upcoming election, to me, it feels a little bit like, it doesn't really affect how I live my life day to day. Do I wish that we could have an elected official that I could stand more firmly by? Yes, but I've actually never felt that in my lifetime to either candidate that has been on. So I don't know, those thoughts are a little scattered, but that's kind of how I feel. I've never felt I've never placed a strong importance on the presidency, and I'm willing to change my thoughts on that, but that's just honestly how I've always viewed it.
Yeah, it's just very interesting to think. It's stressful with the upcoming election, just because it all falls on you as the individual to do your own research and to make your own decisions, which can feel like a really daunting task, which I think is why sometimes people are like, oh, I'll just not vote. I'll just not do it. I'm always like, oh man, it would be so much easier if I just didn't vote. I would have to do all this research. but it is, it's so important to put that work in so that you can either feel more aligned with the president, or you can at least have an idea of, you know, what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
What about you, Kaylor?
Yeah, on the presidency? Well, thank you, Anna, number one. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak on it. I find it, I have probably deep anti-authoritarian tendencies, maybe. I don't deeply respect, I find it hard to respect the office. I do consider it more of a popularity contest. Mm-hmm. And part of that's because I also don't trust or don't appreciate how the parties have. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the parties make it fair enough and easy enough for regular Americans to run, to even have a chance at the presidency, let alone the two individuals that come together.
Yeah, I agree.
That said, it also is an impossible job. I do have a lot of respect for that. So for me, it's more about process. And I think as Americans culturally like to hold people of power to a certain standard. And sometimes I feel like the president somehow almost gets a pass on that. Mm. I think things that would get a city commissioner here in Grand Rapids booted immediately can earn a pass when you're the president of the United States of America. Mm. So that doesn't sit right with me. But that being said, I also get it's a hard job. So I have to meditate on what you said, Maddie. I think it's different than how I feel.
Yeah.
I do think it's critically important because I want it to improve. Mm-hmm. I'd like the president to stand not only as someone that made it through these, you know, crazy primaries and elections, but to actually be someone that represents the best of the United States of America, because they do on the world stage, right? So I think that that's important to me. I think we should continue to try to hold them to the highest standard as possible.
That's a really interesting point. Is like, that's true. From the outside perspective, the president represents like what we as America believe.
You know,
whether that's the case or whether that's not the case, from the outside perspective, he or she is kind of the person who is representing our values and our beliefs and our views. So that's what I really struggle with sometimes too with presidencies is just, oh man, this one person is representing me and the whole country as a whole.
Yeah. I have unfortunate news, which is that we're out of time and we have to, and I know it always goes by so fast, but I wanted to thank all of you so much for your contributions to this conversation. I have one final question for you guys, which ties into the Hauenstein Center's programming theme for this academic year has been empowered citizenship. Mm-hmm. So how can we be better citizens in our country, in our communities, within our institutions, and like make it a better place? So I just wanted to throw it out to all of you. What does empowered citizenship mean to you?
And we talked about this at the CLA before too. I'm trying to remember what I said because I liked what I said. I think that empowered citizenship, it's just meaning looking out into your community, whether that be local or whether that be larger, and seeing what needs to be done and then making steps towards doing it, whether that be just gaining information, whether that be going and volunteering, whether that be voting. I think just doing something to further your civic duty is a good start for being an empowered citizen.
I would agree. I think that to be an empowered citizen, you need to be informed. You need to be willing to be informed too. Like you need to be open to those possibilities. You also need to, if you are seeing fault with something, be willing to get out there and do something about it. At least, you know, you're not going to necessarily change the world in a day, but at least you can make a step towards that process. And then I'm going to make a plug, too. We have a lot of great programming, the Hauenstein Center, the Ford Library Museum. We actually have an upcoming program with Barbara McQuaid at the Ford Library in Ann Arbor coming up on April 9th. And we would love it if people came out to see that. It's going to be streamed, so please look at our website, too, for ways to stream that. But the book that Barbara McQuaid just wrote is How Disinformation is Sabotaging America, Attack from Within. I think that that is that just goes right into what we've been discussing today, is like we need to be better informed and less misinformed society.
Yeah, Brooke, that sounds like a great resource for people. I want to like plug onto your plug. The Hauenstein Center is doing this really cool upcoming project with WGVU called The People's Guide, which is basically a bit of a guide to survive the election year. And we're talking a lot about that kind of stuff, how to be involved, how to get your information and know that you're getting the right information from different media sources. I'm really excited about that project, like I said, because I grew up in a home that didn't really talk about these things. So I don't know how to research these topics. I don't know how to research candidates. I don't know how to find information that's true, because Instagram Reels might tell me a different thing than a CNN article, you know, whatever. So I think that that is a really important thing. So I'm excited for events like this, I think are really important to attend and to be civically engaged. And I'm really excited about our project, your upcoming events, and just programming like this in general. I think that is a piece of empowered citizenship, being informed. And I would say that's what it is for me. And I'm curious to hear your quick answer, Kayler.
Yeah, my quick answer is, I'll say first that I agree with everyone. And then number two, something that I think about a lot with this, I think of what Eric Liu, who is the CEO of Citizen University, a nonprofit to help encourage people to become more empowered citizens, talks about power. As a citizen of the United States, you have power, and you cannot simply decide not to utilize it. Someone's going to utilize it for you on your behalf. So that's what I think about. Whether you want to or not, it's impossible to divest yourself from American society, civilization. You have the power. You have certain rights given to you, and it's your duty. Even when it hurts, you know, it's like paying it's like paying taxes, right? I mean, no one wants, I get it, but like people don't go, well, you know, for your mental health this year, just don't pay your taxes.
I wish.
I know that it's hard. I know you want to divest time. It doesn't mean you can't stop watching all the negative news, but you cannot simply decide to not exercise your power as a citizen. It's just simply not an option in my humble opinion. And with that, I also want to say thank you, everyone, again. Thank you, Maddie, for this opportunity as well, and for putting this all together and offering the technical skill on this podcast.
Well, thank you for co-hosting.
Absolutely, of course. Yep. Thank you to our guests. And I hope that our listeners will join us on April 18th for our Reflections on Patriotism event. If you're listening in the near future, I hope you attend. If you're listening after the event, a recording will be available. All information about the event will be in a link in the description of this podcast. So thank you for listening. I hope you had an interesting and fun journey with us. Thank you.
Thank you.